Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What up, Brightside besties?
Hello, sunshine. Today on The Bright Side, we have one of the it girls in comedy right now, inspiring us to take big risks in our careers. Mary Beth Barone is here to make us laugh and think. She wrote, directed, produced, and financed her own comedy special titled Thought Provoking.
Oh, so inspiring. And then later, we're going to turn the tables and Mary Beth asks us some thought-provoking questions based on The Bright Side's core themes like friendship, dating, and aging. It's a fun one, y'all. It's Thursday, April 18th. I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay, and this is The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine.
Danielle, what's new with you? I feel like we haven't caught up in a minute, actually.
I know. I have been reading and watching TV. I haven't done a daily show in a while, and I forgot something really funny. When you do a daily show, part of your job is to be interesting. And so I haven't had time to read, to consume content, to watch things. And last weekend and this week, I made it a point to do that. So I caught up on Tokyo Vice season two, which is unbelievable. And I'm really just infatuated and obsessed with Japanese culture. And so it's really an amazing show. And then Girls Five Eva, which is so funny. And I love Busy Phillips. And I love that show.
Have you seen Shogun on FX?
No.
Also about Japanese culture, but it takes place many, many moons ago. It's kind of like Game of Thrones-ish, but set in Japanese culture.
You know, it's funny. I went to Japan a few years ago, like right before COVID hit, and the fashion there is unbelievable. They're like years ahead of us.
Yeah.
What's going on with you?
I also have been trying to prioritize just reading and not really watching TV as much. I watched that Ripley show and I loved it, but I'm trying to get through this fantasy series, ACOTAR, that a lot of people love these days. So I'm working my way through that. And that's been really great. That's been a really nice escape.
Time to read, like right before bed?
In the evenings, yeah. It's really tough though. I am feeling so strapped for time these days between kids and the show. But I also have been investing in my health more lately. I'm really on my bodybuilder game again.
I'm
smashing my teen, smashing my protein. I'm lifting weights. Should we get into our morning drip?
Yes, I think so. All right, Ariana Grande's 98-year-old Nona is breaking music industry records. Marjorie Grande is now the oldest living person to make the Billboard Hot 100.
That's so cool.
I know. You know, I don't want to make this about me because it's not, but people always say that Ariana Grande is my celebrity doppelganger.
Uh-oh, is this a Chelsea from Love is Blind moment right now?
You tell me. What do you think?
I don't see it.
Really?
No. I've had
people come up to me at the gym.
What?
It's the ponytail. So Ariana Grande, they released this really cute Instagram photo where she's holding the plaque, and it's sweet. Like, it's really exciting to see.
I love hearing stories about folks in their golden years experiencing success later in life. This is so cool. I mean, obviously, it's facilitated by her super famous, super hot granddaughter. But I love this for Nona.
I love it for Nona. And I love it for Ariana, too, because I think audiences like us are just craving that personal touch. I love getting to know people's families. When we were at South by Southwest, when we kicked off the show, my grandma was actually at South by 2. She had a movie, like a VR film about her life. And the producers and I were laughing because I kept texting her to see her. And she could not find time. She calls me Schnooky. She was like, I'd love to see you, Schnooky, but I'm very busy.
And wait, so that is the cutest nickname ever.
Yeah. But Ariana Grande's Nona found some time. So my Oma better take a page out of her book.
I love it.
All right. Crazy Rich Asians is headed to Broadway. The movie was a huge smash at the box office. Audiences loved it. My mom and I have watched this movie 100 times together.
Really?
Yeah. We love like any sort of romance films and we fight about it because I'll tell her about how like this part isn't feminist or female forward. And she was like, Danielle, it's love. Get over it.
Is she a bit more traditional in that respect?
Yeah, she is. And she's very romantic. So she loved that film. But I'm excited that it's going to be turned into a musical because it's going to be based on the movie, which was based on a trilogy of books, which I actually didn't know. And it's going to have great vision because it's directed by John M. Chu, who directed the movie. And he's directed a ton of other musical films, Wicked, In the Heights, and this is his Broadway directorial debut.
This is going to be a walk in the park for him, though. I mean, some of those dance scenes in the Heights were just so impressive. They were on such a massive scale, so he's going to nail this.
Okay, we have to talk about likability.
Ooh, let's get into it.
Simone and I both came across this article in Glamour, and we could not stop texting about it, so we have to bring it to the pod. Anya Meyerowitz wrote an article titled, Learning to be Unlikable is the Best Thing I've Ever Done. Here's Why.
That headline, first of all, amazing.
Amazing. And the topic really intrigued both of us. She talks about her deep-seated desire to be likable. And she gives incredible examples, like at a massage parlor, the massage isn't going great, but she doesn't want to say anything. At the hospital, when she was giving birth, she really wanted the staff to like her, so she was scared to need anything. She goes into rewriting emails to be likable, even like talking to payroll when they haven't paid her on time. She doesn't want to be unlikable.
This is such a universal issue that I think so many women struggle with, myself included. You have to read this article. Make it a priority to read this article. It was really profound. And it got me thinking about all the things that I've sacrificed in the name of being likable, like my happiness, different opportunities. Ultimately, the desire to be likable has cost me my safety at times as well. And I think when you look across all levels of society, you can see examples of this. There's the issue of likability in politics. Voters elect, quote, unlikable male candidates all the time, but then female candidates have to work twice as hard in order to gain that elusive likability factor. And that's the thing, like, likability is this amorphous, abstract term. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to define. What does that even mean?
That's part of what's difficult about it.
Yeah, exactly. Likeability in Hollywood. I mean, Sofia Coppola said she lost funding for a project because her characters weren't likable enough. There's also a likability gap in business. This article references an experiment from Columbia Business School that studied the likability gap by doing a side-by-side comparison of resumes. So researchers took a female entrepreneur's resume and they made two identical copies of it. One they attributed to Heidi Rosen, who is the actual businesswoman behind that resume. And the other copy, they just made up any random male name. They called him Howard. And then they asked a group of business school students to compare the resumes. And the students agreed that both Heidi and Howard were competent, but they said that Howard was deemed more agreeable and someone you'd want to work with, while Heidi, the exact same resume, she was deemed to be aggressive, selfish, and not the ideal colleague.
I think that likability is an impossible bind because you want to be viewed as a leader or a boss at work. And ultimately, in many ways, when you are a woman, you are looked at as bossy. And for me, I feel like a victim and a volunteer in the likability trap. I feel like I'm a highly sensitive person who can feel people deeply. And so if I say something that you don't like, I can feel it right away. I see it in your eyes, in your body language. I can just feel it. And I want you to like me. And on the other hand, I want to be a competent leader who says what she believes. And one of the things I've learned at work as I've had more experience is that sometimes you are the expert in the room. And I think as women, we have the propensity to look at other people as experts. And taking ownership over your own expertise is really big. But I think likability will cost you jobs. It will cost you negotiation, like salaries. It's very difficult to navigate. The only thing that has ever helped me with this is Alicia Menendez's book called The Likeability Trap. She's a journalist at MSNBC, and her book honestly changed my life. She's the one that called it the impossible bind.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. I have her in my notes too, just to give her a shout out because she's done incredible work on this topic. You know what's funny, Danielle? You don't strike me as someone who struggles with likability or the desire to be liked.
Really?
No, not from the outside. But I think Alicia talks about that as well in her book. Like, you wouldn't assume that this has been a challenge for her either, but she says that she struggles with it quite a bit.
Where do you see it show up in your life the most?
Well, I think it shows up less and less as I get older and less as I spend more time as a mom, because you honestly just run out of brain space to care about what other people think about you. I don't have as much time. But something that Alicia brought up as well is that your relationship with likability is often a reflection of your mother's relationship with likability. And we learn this desire to be likable from our moms. My mom sought likability in an interpersonal context throughout her life, not necessarily in a professional context, mm-hmm. but I definitely saw the ways in which she was aiming to appease or please people. And I saw that, and I think I wanted to run in the opposite direction. And I vacillated back and forth. I think in your 20s, it's really difficult to combat that desire to be likable. But now I'm feeling more firmly rooted, more confident, and I feel like I'm better equipped to combat this desire to be likable now.
I like hearing that motherhood helped you with that. I think age has helped me with it, but motherhood is something I hear a lot from women that I interview. You just run out of bleeps.
Exactly. But I want us to also talk about solutions, because one thing I want to be wary of on this show and just in life is dwelling on the struggles of womanhood, because I think that that can disempower us. To me, the solution here is being brave enough to be unlikable, because the more that we do that, we set an example for other women to do the same. I think it's also being wise enough to know that unlikable women are actually super relatable. Mm-hmm. We see that in films and TV shows all the time. And then, as Alicia would say, advocating for other women is another way to squash this likability complex.
That, to me, is the most significant one, because it's really hard, especially at work. There's power in numbers. So when people support you in something, it's very powerful. I do think a lot of times we think about solutions as like incumbent upon us. And it's important to take responsibility for your actions. And it's important to do everything you can to be the solution. But I also think part of the solution is having men recognize this. Like, I want to know how many men read Alicia's book. I think having a generation of men get more comfortable with women speaking in a certain tone, or like eliminating that word difficult or unlikable. We don't call men difficult, unlikable, diva. These are singular words for women. I think that will really help too.
After the break, we'll hear from another proudly unlikable woman, thought-provoking comedian Mary Beth Barone.
By the way, those are her words, not ours. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pitbull, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. on sale now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
All right, y'all, we're back featuring one of our favorite working comedians, the very funny Mary Beth Barone.
Now, you may have seen her on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, or touring with Chelsea Handler and Jenny Slate, even podcasting with Benito Skinner, or in her brand new YouTube comedy special called Thought Provoking. Mary Beth, welcome to The Bright Side.
It is so good to be here. You are both so smiley, and like I feel this energy. It's really uncommon, so it's great to be here.
We're contractually obligated to smile 36 times per episode, so thanks for noticing.
Honestly, not the first time I've been called smiley. Are you ever called smiley?
Never once in my whole life.
What are you called?
I would say stone-faced, inscrutable, stoic. A lot of those adjectives are how I'm described. Dry.
Have you always been that way, or is this a persona that you put on when you're on stage?
I have always been this way. I didn't even know I was doing like dry humor until people told me. And then now I've seen some home videos of me as a kid. My dad like digitized all our home videos, and I was the exact same as a kid. Very serious.
Were you always performing in those videos? Did you have a mic? Were you doing stand-up from an early age?
We had a lot of like performances in our front hall. There's a lot of like dances. There's some variety shows. And there is a video of me and my ex-best friend dancing to Stop Right Now by the Spice Girls that has circulated online. So yeah, I have a deep history of performance, I would say.
Danielle, she's a theater kid. We have
We're a live one.
We got a live one, folks.
But I'm a theater kid who never did theater. Isn't that cool? I never did a play. I don't know why. I just was like, you know what? I think I'm too big time for it. I'm too big time for the play.
I feel like it's more of an identity than it is an action.
Yeah. As members of the review board for Theater Kids, we permit you to join the club. You absolutely qualify.
Thank you so much.
Well, you're doing comedy now. That's what everybody knows you for. You have a comedy special titled Thought Provoking. And I just want everybody to know how many titles you hold when it comes to this comedy special. You wrote it, you directed it, you financed it, and you produced it.
I did.
Why did you create Thought Provoking?
I created Thought Provoking because I had a lot that I wanted to say, and I wanted to put it out as a complete work. And I didn't necessarily want to wait for the tastemakers in their glass towers to give me permission to do that. Just sort of realizing what the trends are in comedy right now, it feels like there are a chosen few who are allowed and given the space to make their own creative decisions and get these massive deals at streamers. And it just felt like that probably wasn't going to happen, at least not in the time frame that I wanted it to. So I just decided I wanted to do it my own way and be the creative force behind it and make it exactly what I wanted it to be, which, you know, the people that give you money often have a lot of opinions, but I'm lucky enough to have a podcast that I do that helps me pay the bills, and I have some money saved where I was able to finance it. And I am really proud of it. There's a lot of things that, you know, I would do differently, but it was a good exercise in like, this is the footage we have. This is what we're able to do with it. And how do we make that the best version of the special that we can?
There's an incredible story behind the title Thought Provoking. It's kind of a dunk, actually. Can you elaborate, please?
Yes. I was submitting a set for late night TV last year, and I was told by the booker that my jokes were too trying to make a point, in quotes. And he asked if I had any jokes that weren't as much of that. So just less trying to make a point. And I just thought, you know what? I actually don't. I have jokes that make a point and I'm comfortable with that. So if that's not the right fit, it's not the right fit. And that's okay.
Do you think you would ever say something like that to a male comedian?
I think male comedians, maybe they're just not making a point. And maybe that's something we need to think about.
And maybe that's the point. Wait, but you have this joke, speaking of male comedians, you have this joke where you say men are so mad at me for speaking. Mm-hmm. What were you talking about? Will you share more behind that?
Yeah, I have started posting clips on social media, and I posted some on YouTube, and the comments I was getting, I mean, they want me dead. They want women dead or in the kitchen. I literally got a comment that was like, women are good at three things, blowjobs, being in the kitchen. And I don't even remember the third thing. I'm sure it was really profound. But there's still a lot of people online who are comfortable posting and saying things like that. So I knew this special would piss them off. And that's okay, because I don't make comedy for them.
Who do you make comedy for?
I make comedy, as I say in the special, for girls, gay guys, and the straight men who love us. That's my demo. And I'm really comfortable with that.
In your special, you talk about one of the benefits being that you get to choose what you wear. And what female comedians wear has been the subject of much discussion. So can you talk about that calculus behind your wardrobe when you go on stage? How do you make that decision?
There's a lot of thought that goes into what I wear on stage, because you want to wear something that you don't have to adjust a lot, because that can be distracting. So for this special, I really wanted it to be super intentional. And there are a lot of sort of unwritten rules about what people should and shouldn't wear on stage. And I think what's so fun about having more women and queer people in comedy is that we're really rewriting rules and making it whatever we want it to be. And one thing I love about my audience is that they're excited to see what I'm wearing. And I've established that I'm going to turn a look when it's like my show. So I love that they support me in making comedy fashionable, because we have a lot of work to do. And it starts with us.
Women don't always have to wear flannel shirts and jeans on stage. If you want to, that's fine. That's your prerogative.
Totally. But if you want to wear a gown that is Kate Moss's from the 90s, you should also do that.
Yeah. I think it's important to share a little backstory there. It's sort of a thing that women have to, quote, ugly up on stage in comedy. And so I think there's been a few female comedians that have tried to push the envelope there, you being one of them.
Yeah, I think it's because we were trying to fit into male spaces. And we were trying to do shows and be on lineups with people that were attracting a certain audience who don't align necessarily with what we're saying. Being a female comedian is sort of political in and of itself. So for me, it's, yeah, if I have definitely had feedback when I'm performing at clubs or more traditional stand-up venues, like, well, your clothes are distracting.
Right.
And I think if you can't watch my stand-up without being distracted, unless you're totally blinded by how beautiful the outfit is, then I don't know if I'll ever get you on side. So best to just part ways amicably.
Mary Beth, I hate to do this. I really don't want to have to call out your mom, but I'm going to have to do it.
You can.
Because when you were growing up, she told you that female comedians just aren't funny. All they do is talk about their periods. So is your whole career one big I told you so to your mom?
You know, it's so funny because I remember it so vividly as a kid hearing that. And I was like, I guess that kind of makes sense. But I didn't think about it again for many, many years. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that's like what I had been internalizing. And she definitely has, like I say, she's apologized. But I think a lot of the comedy that was making it into people's homes back in the 90s, from women specifically, it felt like they had to lean so hard into being a woman. And that could be their only identifier, and yeah, they can't really speak much outside of like being crass, which I am also crass, but it was probably hard to stick out in such a male dominated industry back then and feel really singular. So while I don't agree, and I know there were a lot of women even in the 90s totally breaking the mold, I understand that a lot of what she was probably seeing might have been tapping into that. But needless to say, I do have some jokes about my period and vagina, and she's totally okay with that, as long as it's part of a larger body of work, I think.
Keyword body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something that you said about how people view comedians almost monolithically. I feel like that's especially true for female comedians. You being a female comedian, I'm sure you sometimes feel like you're expected to carry the entire legacy of female comedians on your back.
Yeah, it is this pressure of like, because you're a comedian, you sort of have to speak out on like every issue. Mm. And I'm trying to be really thoughtful about speaking on things that I am educated on and things that I feel really passionate about. So sometimes you want to be like amplifying like every single issue. I really respect the people that have come before me, because there were even fewer people in their corner who were helping uplift them. It was sort of like you either fit in with the guys or you don't survive. Whereas now I think comedy is a lot more democratic, and we can produce independent shows and we can put stuff out online and our audiences can find us. And I'm just really grateful that those people were there to pave the way. But for me right now, my approach is just like pick a few things that I'm passionate about and you kind of like breadcrumb it in with the funny stuff so that people are getting the information, but it's like putting like sugar and medicine together. That's what I try to do. Even in the special, you know, I talk about a lot of different topics, but I try to make sure that there's enough dumb jokes in there, but that everything is of course trying to make a point.
Don't want to be too thought-provoking. God forbid.
It can be tough. It can be tough.
Mary Beth, from the outside looking in, it seems like you've experienced a lot of success in such a short amount of time. I mean, you left Boston College, moved to New York City, quit your startup job to pursue comedy full-time, and now you're crushing it. How does it feel to be that girl in comedy?
That's very nice of you to say. I have chills. I think this industry is incredibly taxing and there is a lot of rejection and there's a lot of moments where, especially if you look at people around you, you can feel like you're not accomplishing enough or you're not getting enough or you're not doing enough. So I'm working on moments of gratitude and feeling accomplished because I actually moved to New York and I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I had a job for 4 years and then I decided to be a comedian, which is like so random and insane. And I, every step of the way, my friends and family have been there for me 110%. Having that support system is so invaluable. And just like female friendship in general is such a beautiful thing that I think gets portrayed as like, you know, pitting women against each other or not being supportive or talking shit about each other. But that's not my experience.
You have to be a little DeLulu to have any success.
A lot
DeLulu.
Yes.
You come from a big family. Are you the most DeLulu sibling in the bunch?
100%. Yep.
Wait, what's a big family?
I always have been. I'm one of six. I'm the youngest of six. So 3 girls, 3 boys. And I'm just like, I'm very different from my siblings. I care about fashion. I like love brands. I'm like a capitalist pig, but also a socialist. I love attention. That's my love language.
It's so Gen Z to be capitalist and socialist all at the same time. You're very on trend.
Thank you. Well, I'm a Gemini. So I can be both, which is cool.
So I'm a big fan of Ride, which is your podcast.
Thank you.
And you do it with your co-host, who's also a comedian, Benito Skinner, a.k.a. Benny Drama. And you guys are so funny. How did this come together?
So this was during the pandemic. Benito and I, well, he was approached and he was asked if he wanted to do a podcast. And he was like, mm-hmm. I will do a podcast, but only if I can do it with Mary Beth. And then we were thinking about what we wanted the podcast to be. And we wanted it to be really positive. We wanted it to be a space where we could come and talk about things that we really enjoy and just be earnest and genuine. And we each bring one thing per week that we ride for. And we really feel the love for this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think having a platform where we just talk about things that we love, like our audiences, when we perform live, we can feel that they're coming from a place of positivity. They're not sitting there with their arms crossed, like ready to be cultural commentators. They're just like, let's have fun. Let's be silly and crazy and tap into those goofy selves that I think women are sort of told to like suppress when we're teenagers. But this podcast is not about that. The podcast is about just like love and joy. And we do smile sometimes on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So there's some synergy there.
You make all of us smile.
I feel a major crossover event happening. I don't know, between like the Bright Side and Ride.
I could see a collab. I could totally see a collab.
Our DNA is just like, you know, simpatico.
A lot of comedians I know make comedy rounds in terms of stand-up. Their mainstays at the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Store or the Improv, and that's like their home. And you've really done it a different way. What is your advice in terms of doing it your own way?
I would say the most important thing for me has been, and this applies to comedy, but I think it could be applicable to other verticals as well. I am my own favorite comedian. And you should do the thing if you believe that you are going to love your work the most. Because if you don't believe in the work, it's actually impossible to convince other people to like sign on for it. So I just think that is so important. And if you have a burning desire, like let it simmer for a bit and see if it keeps nagging at you.
Yeah.
I've blown up my entire life multiple times and take risks. The fear of it going wrong is worse than the reality, I think.
Blow it up.
Blow it up. Unless you're joining the armed forces, that is like totally different. I can't speak to that. It might not work out.
I love that you said that you've blown your life up multiple times. Like,
I have too.
Yes, you got to blow your life up. If you're not blowing your life up, what are you doing?
You're not living. That's what life's about. It's just like, I really stand by that. Again, I'm in a position of privilege because I have a support system, but I
thought you
it's
were going to say you were in a position of privilege because you have a British boyfriend.
Because I have a British boyfriend.
That's also true.
Doesn't really, stuff just doesn't really affect me the same way.
Do you ever make him like reenact certain like scenes from period films? Because that's what I would do if I had a British boyfriend.
I would if he wasn't constantly getting cast in period films and TV shows. So
oh my God,
I feel
is he an
like
actor?
I get to see it. Yeah, he's an actor. He always gets cast as characters who wear blouses. You know what I mean? Like he's always in a blouse.
We love a blouse king.
I'm in a blouse right now.
And you know what? It looks good.
I honestly think the world would benefit from more blouse kings in 2024. Mm.
Is Lenny Kravitz a blouse king?
Did you see him wearing leather pants in the gym? Did you see that clip of him?
Oh, you know what I did? And that's actually crazy behavior from someone who wore leather pants on stage one time and they split up the front. So let's just say I would not be running to wear leather at the gym if it were him. But I think it's great.
Mary Beth, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are going to be brave like you told us to. We're diving into some of your provoking thoughts. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb.
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/concertweek to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Okay, we are back with Mary Beth Barone, and we're going to flip the script a little right now, and you're actually going to be in the host chair, MB. You have some thought-provoking questions for us based on some of our bright side themes like friendship, dating, aging, optimism, etc. So the floor is yours, Mary Beth. Please host our show.
Okay, so welcome to The Bright Side. I'm Mary Beth Barone. It's so great to be here with such esteemed guests. And I think we should just dive right in. What do you think?
Do it.
Let's go.
Okay, so I prepared some questions to provoke thoughts. And everyone listening, you can also bring these to the group chat, bring these to the next Hinge date or whatever app you use, and see what people say. See if you're in alignment. So The first question has to do with dating. So my question to you is, would you turn into an ogre permanently if it meant that you got to be with the love of your life?
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, love
for
wins.
Sure. I love wins. I am such a sucker for big love. I'm holding out for it. Yeah.
I'm all about goblin mode already, so
okay.
That's not a stretch for me.
This isn't even a departure.
No, ogre mode is the next level up from goblin mode, so.
That's how you'll evolve.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
I will say waiting for big love is totally worth it.
Thank you for that.
Even if you have to turn into an ogre.
When I hear other people who find it tell me that, it makes me be okay holding out, so thank you.
You got to be patient, but it's what we're on earth to do, is to find our big love. So, okay, great. You're both on the right side of history and pro-ogre. Next question. If you did 23andMe and found out that you had a secret relative, who would be your first call?
I did this. Although I think I did Ancestry.com, which is maybe my biggest regret because now the government has my DNA. Like, it's not okay.
They probably had it before.
They have it all.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I'm like highly findable now. There's like so many people on Ancestry.com that they say I'm related to. It's like my fifth cousin. There's a million of them all over the world. I called my grandmother because she's the keeper of our family tree to see if any of this was legit. Mm-hmm. She was uninterested. She said she has her own Ancestry.com account and that I need to focus on my job.
Well, she was like, this is old news. Don't bug me with this crap.
Exactly. Yeah.
I actually did find out that I have a bonus brother, but it wasn't through Ancestry. I haven't told you this story, so I guess I'll tell you today.
I'm seated right now. This is huge.
It was huge. Okay, so I've been an only child my whole life, right? I was 21. I was in college. I'm home for Thanksgiving break. And my dad says to me, Simone, I need you to come sit down. We have some big news to share with you. My heart is pounding outside of my chest right now. I'm like reliving that moment. I thought somebody had cancer. I thought somebody was dying. He tells me, I had a son in college that I didn't know about. And you have a half brother. And I, in that moment, like it just... Talk about blowing up your life. Like, it blew up my whole life. So eventually we got to meet and we connected. And yeah, now I have a half brother that I only met when I was an adult. It's crazy.
Wow. That's huge for your whole family.
It is.
Pretty cool, too, that your dad sat you down and just told you.
Yeah.
It's not easy to share news like that. That must have been hard for him.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's some beautiful parts that come with it. There's obviously a lot of baggage, a lot of like where, you know, just the messiness of humanity comes in. But my dad and my brother have a really good relationship now, I think is as best as you could hope for.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it is possible. You never know. You could have a bonus relative out there somewhere, folks.
Thanks for sharing with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And who was your first call? I have to know.
Oh, my first call. It was probably whoever was in my top eight at the time on MySpace.
Okay.
Yeah. One of my best friends from college. I honestly can't remember, but yeah.
That's top eight so for funny. Sure.
Top eight was huge. I mean, talk about divisive.
Oof. That was polarization.
That was weaponizing social media.
100%.
Last question. What's been the most surprising benefit of getting older?
Oh, Mary Beth.
I love
coming
this
with
question.
The hard-hitting questions. These are so bright side.
I have to provoke the thoughts.
I think for me, it's been surrendering. I used to feel like I could control everything and that if I didn't do X, Y, and Z, I wouldn't get a certain outcome. And I'm sort of free of that now, and that is freeing, like to know that only a certain amount is in your control and not act out of these deep emotions that you don't understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Like when you're in college, if there's like a guy that rejects you, you just go and you like text another guy. And that is such a like metaphor of like what not to do in life, you know? And so that reaction I don't have anymore. Like if I get rejected by a man or a job or anything, I don't go put my mess of emotions on anybody else. I can self-regulate now.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
I love that.
I think the most surprising benefit of getting older, I'm torn. It's either day drinking or JOMO. Because day drinking is just fantastic. It's a revelation. You go your whole adolescent life thinking that you can only drink between the hours of 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. But then when you hit a certain age, your world just opens up and you can have an Aperol spritz at 11 a.m. or, you know, and then keep drinking mimosas
11.
At a bottomless brunch.
Damn.
I mean, all the timelines shift a bit. You know, we go to bed a lot earlier. And then JOMO, too. I mean, JOMO is a huge benefit. The joy of missing out. I don't feel the fear anymore.
I'm so with you. I feel like JOMO is fab.
Mary Beth, what's yours?
Well, besides being able to like go out to dinner whenever I want and not be stressed about my bank account, I think for me, it's just being more honest. Like, I don't really care as much how things are perceived by others. And I feel like being honest, and I read about this in the Bell Hooks book, All About Love, which like really reinforced my approach, which is just like, I'm way more honest with people. And if you want my opinion, I'm going to give you exactly how I feel. And if you don't like that, then it's not like I'm like out being a bitch to everyone. It's just like, I will give you my honest response. And that is something I wasn't always able to do. And I think that's been really fun to explore, just being upfront with people.
Mm-hmm. This actually reminds me of something that we were just talking about earlier today. So it's this idea of the power of being unlikable. There is this Glamour article that got us thinking about this, and the headline is, "Learning to be unlikable is the best thing I've ever done." Does that idea resonate with you?
Yeah, because I'm not for everyone. And if I wanted a career where I was palatable and broad, which is fine and so respectable, I would have gone about things completely differently. But I just think that my comedy and my point of view can be really polarizing. And I know there's people that think I'm just like a mouthy bitch. And that's your honest reaction to me. And that's fine. But I, again, like I'm repelling the right people because I don't care if they don't like me. But I think that that's something that does come with age. And I do credit a lot of unlikable female characters that have come onto our TV screens in the last decade, because that's like, that was formative.
Who are some of those unlikable female characters you're thinking of?
The entire cast of Girls comes to mind.
Oh, yes.
Sex and the City. I saw this article recently about Gen Z watching Sex and the City and how the views in it are outdated and the characters aren't likable. But I'm like, they're complex. They make choices that you feel are wrong. That's how everyone leads their lives. They're acting selfishly and they make mistakes. And I think that seeing that on TV is like an important part of accepting ourselves for who we are.
What's your next blow up? Are you planning to blow up your life anytime soon?
Maybe this is a new thing. Instead of glow up, it's blow up.
Oh,
it's blow
I love up. That. It's your blow up.
I will tell you, but you have to bleep it. I don't want you to cut it, but I want to spark intrigue.
Okay.
Okay. Keep the mystery.
Keep the mystery. I might.
Stop. Really?
I might. I'm not sure yet. I'm figuring it out. I'm figuring it out.
I did not see that coming. I was thinking, awesome. Wow.
Yeah. I have some stuff to figure out before. Yeah.
Yeah.
We can make some calls too for you. Mm-hmm. Like we know some people.
I will
over
need
there.
It.
Thanks for sharing your next blow up with us.
The next blow up.
Mary Beth, I love what you're bringing to comedy. Thanks so much for bringing it to the bright side too.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for watching the special. I feel like that makes me feel really good. I'm going to ride that wave for the 5 minutes after we hang up. I'm going to celebrate that. And then I'll be back to my toxic thoughts. But this was so lovely. And thank you for creating a space where people can be smiley and talk about funny things and not funny things. And I love it. More women with podcasts, please. You guys, seriously, please.
It's a boys club out there.
Yeah, yeah. It's enough, especially in the top 10. One of my favorite quotes is, if you can make them laugh, you can make them listen. And that's really what I think you're doing. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Mary Beth Barone is a comedian, writer, and actor. You can watch her latest special, Thought Provoking, now on YouTube.
I love her dry sense of humor. She really tickles my funny bone.
I know. She cracks me up.
You know, I love how she created her own content and put herself on stage and wrote and produced and directed and financed it. It's really freaking hard to do that. And she didn't wait for permission. I feel like in life at any stage, there's all of these like false guardrails that are set up. Like you have to do a certain thing to get into college, or do a certain, you have to have a job as an assistant before you become a manager. And she just said, I'm not going to wait to do it the way everybody else has. I'm going to do it myself. And she gave herself permission. And I really respect that.
You can see how she did that at several different turning points in her life. Every step of the way, she's giving herself permission and she's not afraid to blow up her life. I'm still thinking about that phrase, blow ups over glow ups.
You like that one?
I love it. She's the queen of blow ups. I can't wait to see what she does next. I think if we watch her, we'll be amazed to see where she goes in like the next 10 years.
Yeah, and I think it could take some twists and turns. She's highly intelligent, just like most funny people are.
Mm-hmm. Very true. All right, Brightside besties, we are featuring our April Reese's Book Club pick on the show very soon. The author is Claire Lombardo, and the book is The Most Fun We Ever Had. So send in your questions for Claire to hello@thebrightsidepodcast.com.
And you don't want to miss tomorrow. We're talking about what so many women on the internet are talking about, birth control. Fortunately, we have an expert here. OBGYN and CEO of Sanctum Med Wellness, Dr. Jessica Shepherd, is answering all of our questions about side effects, pain, and how to feel confident in choosing a birth control method that's right for you.
Oof, such an important topic. All right, that's it for today's show. Listen and follow The Bright Side on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Simone Boyce. You can find me at Simone Boyce on Instagram and TikTok.
I'm Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. That's R-O-B-A-Y.
See you tomorrow, folks. Keep looking on the bright side.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Simone, you may not know this, but I have been bitten by the travel bug. This time of year, I crave the outdoors and the mountains and adventure. They're calling to me.
I mean, we were both in Austin recently for work and also having a time. And as soon as I got home, I was already on Airbnb planning my next trip, possibly this summer. And while I'm away, I'll be hosting my home on Airbnb.
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.